For Antiwar.com, I'm Scott Horton. This is Antiwar Radio. All right, our next guest is Jonathan Hafitz from the American Civil Liberties Union. Welcome to the show, sir. How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Well, Barack Obama gave his competing speeches, the contest with Dick Cheney, last week. And Rachel Maddow, I thought, did a really great job of pointing out how Obama gave a really great speech about the rule of law and the superiority, in fact, of the constitutional way of doing things. And then turned around and basically sounded just like Dick Cheney and said, we're going to make up a new ad hoc way to imprison people and deny them the very basics of, you know, Fifth Amendment protections, for example. What do you make of this? What's going on?
Well, I think the speech did sound the right themes, but as you mentioned, you know, it embraced a number of very problematic proposals that are at odds with the values President Obama purported to be embracing, in particular the use of military commissions, and secondly, the idea of indefinite or detention without charge.
Well, now, was he referring to powers that already exist under the Military Commissions Act, do you think, or he was talking about passing a new law?
Well, it's unclear. I mean, he's indicated that he's going to go back to Congress to make some changes to the military commissions. You know, it wasn't totally clear, you know, whether he's going to seek some new statute to detain without charge, or he's just going to be continuing to use the powers that President Bush claimed exist but don't exist.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the Military Commissions Act itself gives the president broad authority to decide these things himself, and Bush even affixed a signing statement to it that said, by the way, I can do whatever the hell I want anyway, and how do you like that? So why would he even need to go back to Congress, do you think?
Well, I think the Military Commissions Act does not give the authority to detain indefinitely.
And doesn't it?
No, it just only gives it claims to give the authority to try individuals without charge, try individuals with military commissions, but those provisions are will be subject to challenge. But I think it's also important to remember this is a failed system. It's a system that's produced only three convictions. It's brought ill repute on the United States. The rightly denounces kangaroo courts, and President Obama had indicated he was going to end this and bring some real change, but instead he's just kind of tinkering with what's basically a failure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so pardon me. The part where I was confused is the power that Bush claimed that said that, well, even if you're acquitted in your military commission, I can still hold you as an enemy combatant. That actually was not in the Military Commissions Act. That's basically the power he was claiming with that signing statement.
Well, he may be claiming it under a different statute, the 2001 authorization for use of military force. It was basically what authorized the military action in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And they've used that as a claimed authority to pick up anyone in the world and hold them without trial.
Well, now, has Obama officially renounced that?
No, he's largely he's embraced it with some minor modifications.
Like what?
Well, I mean, he said that in order to be detained without charge, you need to provide not just support to Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or so-called associated forces, which includes, you know, tons of groups that are not terrorist organizations, but the support has to be substantial.
Hmm. But it still means, you know, you have to be found guilty by an intelligence report, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, it largely embraces the same paradigm.
Interesting. And when he was a senator, he opposed the Military Commissions Act and this whole structure, right?
That's correct.
It's very strange. Pardon me, I know this is far afield, but it's just sort of a metaphor or something. It's not your expertise. But when he gave his speech in Prague, he said, we need to abolish nuclear weapons, but not in our lifetimes. And by the way, we're going to install missiles here. And it seems like that's really the way this guy goes. Whatever is at the beginning part of the speech is to lull you to sleep for the end of it, where he breaks the bad news to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I mean, I think he has, you know, a lot of, he's said a lot of important things, and he's made some positive steps. But on the other hand, you know, I think there's a lot less, a lot more stuff that's at the surface than real change underneath.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, the Glenn Greenwald did such a great job of pointing this out, continues to, that the Wall Street Journal and the Weekly Standard and the National Review keep, they're basically the biggest champions of Obama's policies along these lines at this point, and claiming vindication with every bit of it. And then even the Washington Post and the New York Times turn around and define this as the center, that it's, you know, people like, you know, Jonathan Haifetz must be a far left-wing radical over there at the ACLU, so it's safe to ignore what you're saying. The real center knows that Obama needs to do these things, apparently. Now it's agreed all around.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good description of the dynamic at work, and I think it's just false. I mean, I think a lot of what Obama is embracing and claiming is very, very close to the policies of the Bush administration. I mean, I think, you know, there's some differences. He's rejected torture. He's promising to close Guantanamo, but he's embraced a lot of things. Again, military commissions, indefinite detention, and he's just kind of tweaking the edges, but basically has embraced, a lot more than he's distanced himself from.
Well, now, I'm not a left-wing radical, but I am a radical, and my position on the Bill of Rights is that anything in Article 1 through 7, notwithstanding, these 10 amendments trump them. So, yes, it's true that in Article 2, the president is granted the authority to be the commander-in-chief of the military forces when called into the actual service of the United States by the Congress, but the Fifth Amendment is still the Fifth Amendment, and that whole commander-in-chief clause means nothing when compared to the Fifth Amendment. Is that the official stance of the ACLU?
I think to the extent that the claim that the president as commander-in-chief could not trump the the right of someone to Fifth Amendment protections, including the right to a trial, is exactly correct. I mean, we don't believe the president can authorize indefinite detention outside of some limited examples where you can have some forms of detention. For example, individuals who fall within traditional and recognized forms of, you know, combatants, prisoners of war, and the like can certainly be held without trial until the end of hostilities. But the idea that you can have some kind of amorphous combatant category that includes anyone that you believe is dangerous, even suspected of terrorist organization, that is not true. We believe those individuals don't have a right to a trial. That essentially someone who's being held as a criminal has a right to a trial under the Fifth Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is where the situation got all messy, right? Because Dick Cheney and David Addington decided on September 11th that, never mind legalities, we're not convening a grand jury, this is a war. And so people who are arrested are not criminals. They're not guilty of conspiracy to commit acts of murder or whatever. They're bad guys to be detained for a war that never ends.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And it's a it's a way to have it's an end run around our most basic constitutional protections. And the other thing that's important to point out is there's really no limit. You know, today you're talking about Al-Qaeda, but it's not even just Al-Qaeda. It's associated groups. And if we look at who's at Guantanamo, it's, 90% of the people have no alleged connection to Al-Qaeda. And then you go beyond that. Who is it next? Is it suspected, people involved in drugs? Is it violent crime? I mean, what's the stopping point? Right. If the idea is that the president can simply order detention of individuals based on dangerousness, we really have a collapse of our most basic safeguards, which are secured through, the right to a trial if you're going to be held.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, maybe some Americans or maybe substantial numbers of Americans would say, well, if you arrest Jose Padilla at O'Hare Airport and civilian police arrest him and he's unarmed at the time and what have you, that he ought to go to the court system. But if we're talking about people arrested on the quote-unquote battlefield in a foreign country far away from here and our government says they're terrorists, that I could see why some people might at least not immediately conclude that, of course, they ought to have their day in court in Virginia somewhere or something like that.
No, that's right. I mean, I think Padilla case is a very extreme example, as is the Almari case. A guy represented Ali Almari, who was arrested in Peoria, Illinois, at his home. It was held for 6 years as an enemy combatant before we...
You were his lawyer?
I represented Almari, yes.
Did they torture him like they did Jose Padilla?
Yeah, he was subjected to a range of harsh interrogation methods that bordered on, in some cases, amounted to torture, sleep deprivation, prolonged isolation, stress positions. So yes, I mean the answer is basically yes. He was subjected to torture and other abuse at the brig, and even equally importantly, he was held for years, for 6 years, without charge. Until we were able to challenge his detention in the Supreme Court and force the government's hand.
And again, these acts took place at the brig. That means in South Carolina, on American soil.
All on American soil. The arrest, the detention, the mistreatment, all on American soil.
And this man, Almari, was what the law calls a U.S. person. Is that true or not?
Yes, he was a legal U.S. resident. He was here living in the United States legally.
And now, does the Bill of Rights refer to citizens anywhere or simply people under the jurisdiction of the United States government?
It just refers to persons, actually. Well, it depends what provisions, but the Fifth Amendment provision, the Due Process Clause, it refers only to persons. And it's been long understood to apply to non-citizens as well as citizens. The government has disputed after 9/11 that, and even before that, that it applies to non-citizens outside the country. But even the Bush administration has not, argued that it does not apply to people within the country. I mean, the Constitution applies clearly, in full, to all people within this, in the United States.
Now, is there a place where people can read about the mistreatment of Almari? Because I've had a lot of trouble finding details of his treatment the way it came out about Jose Padilla.
Yes, I mean, it's on the our website, www.aclu.org. And there's been some stuff written about it in the papers.
Okay, well, I need to do more research along those lines. I know in the Padilla case, they talked about sensory deprivation, of course, and isolation for a long period of time. It's been a while since I read that legal brief that his lawyers had submitted for dismissal based on outrageous conduct, but I don't think I recall stress positions as being part of their complaint. That seems, the kind of thing that's right off of the Rumsfeld list, right?
Well, absolutely. The timing was such when Almari was detained as an enemy combatant, is when torture was basically the policy of the U.S. government. It was just months after John Yoo had written a second memo extending his torture memo to the Defense Department. So this was all sort of part and parcel of a torture culture in Washington, D.C. that was operating at the time.
Well, I'm not sure, the legalities, what all you're allowed to say about this or being his lawyer, how you're supposed to spin this or exactly what. But he pled guilty and got a plea bargain and went to jail for, I think, 15 years he was sentenced to?
Well, I mean, he hasn't been sentenced yet. The plea deal was
to
a maximum. Yeah, they ultimately, when the government realized, recognized it could not defend his detention in the Supreme Court, and charged him in a criminal court. Finally, he was charged with two counts of providing material support to terrorism. He pled guilty to one. So instead of facing a maximum of 30 years, he faced a maximum of 15 years. He'll be sentenced later this year, will be vigorously, arguing that he has a right to, of that 15 years, he has a right to credit for time he has put in military detention, the 6+ years he spent at the brig.
Mm-hmm. So was he then, he pled guilty, I forgot what they call it. Did he have to read a thing explaining, yes, I'm guilty and this is what I did and all that?
Yes, there was a plea allocution, which is a matter of a public document.
Yeah, the allocution, that was the word I was searching for there. And so he was a sleeper agent of Osama bin Laden then, or can you confirm that, or what's that?
Well, what I can say is that the plea basically says that what he pled to was providing material support to Al-Qaeda.
Huh. In other words, I just need to go read it for myself, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it was essentially, but of course, the central issue in the legal issue, larger legal issue, was in his challenge was not guilt or innocence. It was, although he maintained, he asserted his right to a criminal trial, his right to have a chance to prove the allegations, and ultimately the plea deal was, I think, viewed largely a part of the fact that he had a right to constitutional protections, and the deal was a kind of reflection, I think, of the law. Remember, the government had filed a 2-count indictment, and he only pled to 1 count. So the government recognized, I think, some of the problems in their case.
Yeah, it did seem like if this guy was the danger that they said he was, he would have gotten a longer sentence. But then again, if he was anything like innocent, you'd have taken it to trial no matter what.
Well, I mean, I don't have a comment other than to say that I think, in the United States, in the federal court system, I don't know the exact figure, but it's upwards of more than 90% or 95% of people plead guilty. So I think that in all defendants, and particularly someone who's been locked up for 7 years, there's always a cost-benefit analysis when you plead guilty. You ensure you will go to jail for less time than you would if you go to trial, but you obviously, which is always run the risk. I mean, innocent people get convicted, there's always risks. And so I think in any plea bargain, it's a kind of reflection of the that kind of compromise.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, even if he was planning on, another September 11th, he still deserves a trial no matter what. There certainly shouldn't be any controversy about that anymore. I guess there still is.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right.
Well, and when they went ahead and decided to indict him, it was to duck to the Supreme Court ruling. It was to take away his standing, your standing, to get this issue before the Supreme Court finally. Same thing that Bush did with Jose Padilla.
That's correct. I mean, and then that's correct. Unfortunately, at least the Supreme Court vacated the lower court opinion upholding the detention, so at least the precedent was wiped out. But you're correct. You're right. I mean, they ducked the issue. So obviously, they don't feel very confident about their most extreme claims. The government doesn't feel so confident about the most extreme claims of detention power that were asserted during the Bush administration. If they were, they clearly would have welcomed the challenge and to have the Supreme Court ruling, but they essentially ran the other way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Bush still wanted to claim the power, I guess. He just didn't have confidence that he could win. So if we can assume bad motives on the part of Obama, that he means to maintain the power just as much as Bush did, then that's what he would do too, right? Is, continue to use this process against people right up until it's about to get to the Supreme Court and keep doing it again and again that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, the hope is that Obama would make a change. He would just, he would have a new policy, and it's unclear, it's unclear what he's going to do within the United States. He's not, there are no more enemy combatants within the United States. He hasn't claimed the authority to hold an enemy combatant in the United States, although he hasn't disavowed it. But he has claimed, broad detention powers at Guantanamo. But all this is emerging, and unfortunately, the picture is, much more continuity than change, and an embrace of central pillars of the Bush detention policy.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you also about, I got two more issues, actually, real quick here. One of them is the Supreme Court ruling about that if a suspect says, I want to talk to my lawyer, as long as they sort of begin walking toward the telephone to start getting you a lawyer or whatever, that in the meantime, before your lawyer gets there, they can continue to grill you instead of being forced to leave you alone until your lawyer gets there, like has always been the case, as far as I know, in my lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, I think this was a very troubling ruling in terms of the Fourth Amendment rights defendants, very narrow ruling. And I think, it's an example of, the erosion of civil liberties. We talk about the terrorism context, but it's happening outside terrorism context as well.
Mm-hmm. But so you would advise any listener who is being questioned by the police to just go ahead and keep their mouth shut, ask for a lawyer, and if they keep asking you questions, you still have the right to remain silent. That hasn't changed. The only thing that's changed is they have the power now to continue badgering you after you've asked for a lawyer.
Yeah, I don't want to give out about legal advice, but I think, you're correct that you still have that right to remain silent.
Okay, and now one more thing real quick here before I let you go. I know you got to go. The state secrets. A judge apparently is threatening the administration over an overbroad invocation of the state secrets privilege. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think just briefly, this is a You know, this is a continued battle where there's resistance in the Ninth Circuit regarding information of the warrantless surveillance program, and you know, the government is just continuing to, you know, refuse to, you know, produce evidence even after the arguments have been rejected by the courts.
All right, everybody, that's Jonathan Hafetz from the ACLU. Thanks very much for your time on the show today.
Okay, my pleasure. Thanks a lot.